Oh, you the voice?
Nah, not me.
So if you're not the voice, who is?
The people, man. The people's the voice.
So what does that make you?
That makes me the middleman. I'm the middleman.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Middleman Podcast. I am the man in the middle, Kevin Martinez, and today I am joined by local journalist Haley O'Brien.
Hey, Kevin, thank you for having me.
Of course, thank you for coming out. You are a journalist, the first to come on the Middleman Podcast, first journalist.
Great.
So I appreciate your interest, and I am very excited to get into the stories that you have for us.
And I have lots.
Perfect. So why don't we just start as to where it started? You know, journalism for you. What drew you to journalism? Was it something that you knew that you wanted to do at a young age? Was it something that you found out that you were passionate about later in life?
Not really. And it's funny because people from my high school have said to me, you're one of the few people who actually knew what you wanted to do when you grew up, because I was reading the morning announcements in high school. Mm-hmm. But I did that. I did theater. I did speech and debate. I liked performing, the adrenaline. Being in front of people, the thrill of that. I wasn't a studier or a test taker. So I went into college. I went to Marywood, loving TV and radio, wanting to get my hands on that technology equipment and just like tell stories and do a lot of, you know, creative things I could do. From there, you know, I went into there actually telling people I wanted to be on Saturday Night Live. Went into college actually saying that. And then, you know, kind of halfway through my college experience, I got serious about news reporting. I was reading the news a lot, watching TV news a lot. Really loved TV news because it encompasses everything. Mm-hmm. Audio, video, visuals, writing. So then I went into TV news.
Love it. So it sounds like initially you kind of fell in love with the tech side of it. You were more so on the backside, trying to be off the camera, and then eventually you transition into being in front of the camera.
Yeah.
Do you remember if there was like an aha moment that was like, you know what, like, I think I like this better?
You know, I got my first behind the scenes job working in the control room. Mm. And I knew that there was a job becoming more popular where reporters were basically being their own photographer and editor. So that was kind of a job I wanted leaving college. That's what I wanted to do. But I was in the control room and I was told like I couldn't really make that switch from production to news. People told me.
Really?
Yeah. They said, oh, that's not going to happen. People in the control room don't become reporters. They said it's so separate. But I learned and made my way to eventually get hired as a reporter.
That's awesome. You know, I honestly could see why people say that. And that is just because I think people who work behind the scenes like it that way. That's their preference. That's what they want it to be. You know, for example, Michael here loves to be behind the scenes. You know, we've had him in front of the camera, but he's more comfortable behind the scenes. You know what I mean? Behind the camera. So I think that's why they were necessarily like, yeah, that it's just uncommon. You probably don't see that too often, right?
Yeah. But, you know, there were people in my position who wouldn't take any job if it wasn't on camera right away.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Whereas
okay.
Like I knew I wanted to be on camera eventually. I wanted ownership of my stories, but I still wanted to be in the live TV in the process. You know, I wanted to be in the control room, in the newsroom. I wanted to try every job there was because I was still open to doing different things.
Gotcha. So what was the first stepping stone to like transition you out of the control room and then onto the camera?
Thanks for asking, because I'd love to share this with anybody who's trying to get a job like this or move up in their career. Because I had first tried to get hired in the newsroom and didn't have any luck. And I just started hanging out in the newsroom every chance I get. Okay. When I wasn't stuck in the control room. I made friends in the newsroom and I was asking them, how do you do this? How do you do your job? What is being a producer? What is being a reporter? And I think the news director noticed.
Gotcha.
And eventually I was taking it over. They hired me, which was something that was kind of unheard of at the time. But, you know, we're seeing that so much more and more. Everybody on TikTok is a content creator.
Yeah.
And on camera. We can do it all. Why not?
110%. If you're there at the right place, and especially because you're taking the time, like it's free time. It's time that you're willing to give up on your own, not being asked to do it. you know, yeah, the director probably noticed, you know, everyone was chatting about you, and nonetheless, that's what happened. So congratulations to you. One question here, as far as like journalism and the start of it, I just wanted to know if there are any platforms that, you know, allow a starting, like anyone starting up, where do you distribute your content? How do people go about that? Did you have to like distribute articles by yourself before you were even partnered with any type of news crew?
No. So I started out working for a news station.
Okay.
From there, I was hired for another one. That's the best way to get your stuff out there. I mean, if a credible news agency hires you, boom, you have a platform of tens or hundreds of thousands, or even millions of people. You're just associated with that brand name.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're freelancing on your own, it's going to be more difficult. Then again, you have more creative freedom. You can have a blog, you can write about whatever you want. And then when you're applying for jobs, you can use that as your, you know, your sample, whatever you call it, your portfolio.
Gotcha.
And, you know, that can be different.
I understand that. Perfect. So like, one question, you know, you were very passionate about local journalism. Okay, local journalism. What makes you so passionate about local journalism rather than like worldwide? What's the difference for you that makes you want to head towards that direction, and you are in that field and that's your main focus is local news?
Yeah, local news is so important because we're all living in communities.
Okay.
Nobody lives in just the earth or just the United States. We all live in a community and we're all citizens, and as citizens, we have a right to vote. And so what am I getting at here? I'm trying not to like be annoying and say like, do your civic duty of being a voter and an informed voter. Mm. So let me think for a second before I spit this out. Yeah, I just think everybody is part of a community.
Okay.
And you should be aware of what's happening in your community. The people that are local lawmakers are going to make the most decisions that will impact you directly. So once you get involved and you pay attention to what's happening locally, you can get involved and you can make change. There are a lot of people who believe that they don't. They believe they're just one. Mm. But easily, you can get people to rally behind you and make change.
You know, it's funny that you say that, because right now I feel like we are making some change here in the Middleman Podcast. You know, there's just a lot of things going on locally. We're starting to gain some traction. Okay. I'm not originally from this area. I'm from Mount Pocono, Toby Hanna, you know. So now I'm starting to hear like, yo, like you're doing it different here. You know, you're doing it different. No one's doing it like you. And it's like, oh, that's crazy, because like for a while now I've been doing this and I've like, it's just been like regular. You know, we've been upgrading every now and then as we could. But hearing the feedback, winning the local crowd over, so to speak, and also being able to like, in a sense, guys, I hope you don't take disrespect to this, but this podcast, in a sense, is a form of journalism. Correct?
Oh, absolutely. It's, you know, storytelling. You're an interviewer. You're great at it.
Thank you.
And, you know, it's funny. Before I was coming here, I was thinking like, this is the complete opposite side of what I usually do.
Yeah.
I question people about what they do. And people should be excited about this because you're letting them talk about what they do. A lot of times I'm pressing people and they, you know, they feel a lot of pressure. And of course, because I have that really big platform.
Yes.
They're like, oh my gosh, you know, whatever I say to this woman, I better be careful what I say because she can make me look really bad. So some people do get really nervous. But I just try to tell people, you know your stuff. I'm just going to ask you about what you know.
Uh-huh.
Right?
And as long as you're 110% the whole time and you're not faking it, then you should be all right.
Yeah.
But they get nervous. You know, it's funny because, you know, later, I was going to bring this up later, but we'll bring it up right now, is the talking point that you brought up to me was like how people talk to you because you're a journalism. Is it different? Can you sense the fakeness or maybe something that it just doesn't sound natural rolling off the tongue when you're speaking to someone, when you're doing an interview? Have you ever asked a question where it's like, no comment, you know, like.
Oh, definitely.
Give me the insight here.
You know, everybody is different. People definitely get nervous. There are some people, you know, local leaders and stuff who will say just about anything on camera or, you know, on the record because they trust me. And I really enjoy that because our conversations, like let's say with a county commissioner, I'm basically asking them to describe taxes, zoning, you know, really complex things. And I'm saying, can you dumb it down to a person like me who's going to read an, you know, I need to write an article about this for a normal person who doesn't know about zoning or tax assessment.
Yeah.
So we really need to have like a frank conversation. And if they trust that the, you know, the parts that I'm going to publish are just the parts where they're explaining something or they're, you know, providing something useful. You know, once they trust that, we have a really good conversation. But I've had great conversations with other people who are more careful about the words they say. And they'll say, let's go off the record. Or they'll say, are you recording right now? And I say, yeah, but I can stop if you want to answer this question off the record. I always respect that. I just want people to trust me.
That's interesting.
That's what about you?
You know, I don't think we've had that here. I don't think we've had that. You know, what I've been trying to do. So as I mentioned, you know, this is kind of a form of journalism. And my first season go around, you know, I was really focusing on building and highlighting everyone and so on and so forth, that I would let anyone just come on here. You know, even people who stated that they were a part of something and they probably weren't. And I would let them talk and keep talking. And I would let them do what they had to do to make it through the podcast. But then after the fact, when I listened to it, I'm like, damn, I should have really called them out. So now I've been calling them out. So recently I had to call someone out. Okay. Ooh. But it wasn't bad. He responded how he responded. But, you know, like for the most part, everyone does answer. My problem is sometimes I'll just get a dry answer. I'll get a dry answer. And that's really, really hard to battle through. Especially because I think I'm well prepared, and when I'm not well prepared, it just you know, affects the podcast, it affects the show, it affects my mental during the show. I'm sweating, I'm fumbling, you know, I'm losing it. But you know, someone compared podcasting to a boxing match. Said every punch you throw is a question. A question is a punch. If you hit, fantastic. If you miss, you exerted a lot of energy, and now you're fumbling and getting ready for your next fight. You know what I mean? So when I ask a question and it miss, I'm like, damn. So no, people 9 times out of 10 do answer, but they answer dry. And that's what I run into. That's a problem for me. Trying to combat a way out of that and pick the conversation back up. You
have a challenge that I don't. I don't do podcasting or live interviews. So
yeah,
you have to be on right now. Whereas I'm interviewing people and then I have to worry while I'm writing, am I taking this out of context? Am I really including all the information?
Gotcha. Yeah, no, so that's another thing that I wanted to bring up is because, like, you know, you're on a big platform, you know, everything is, so to speak, probably pre-recorded or maybe thought out, you know, and this is live. How does this feel right now that you're on the opposite side of the chair doing something live? Are you comfortable with something live? Would you like to, there's programs that go live, right?
Yeah, I do live hosting. I'm okay. A fill-in at WVIA.
Yes. Let's get into that. That's where considered. I was going next, by the way. So let's talk about WVIA. What does that stand for? I've been trying to Google it.
It doesn't stand for anything?
Didn't think so.
There are call letters that each like local TV station has, like WNEP. I think it's Northeast Pennsylvania related, but don't quote me on that.
Gotcha.
So anyway, WVIA is our local public media station. PBS and NPR, we just started doing local news, mm-hmm. which is really exciting. So it's a growing news department, and podcasting and audio radio is coming back. So I'm really excited about getting into NPR again. I am now used to talking into a mic and hearing myself in my ears. That used to freak me out so much because I had done like live TV where I'm talking into a microphone, looking at a camera. But it's just like, you know, there's no one there.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a lot different. So intimate, you know?
Yeah, I like it. You know, some people don't. You know, they'll be like, yeah, I don't want to hear it because they don't like the way of their voice. I don't want to sound cocky, but I like my voice. There's obviously a reason I'm doing a podcast, right?
That's great. Hey, you have to have confidence.
Exactly. So WVIA, you've been with them for how long now?
About a year now. So I've been a medical health reporter, covering a lot of stories definitely pertaining to the older population. Next week is Elder Abuse Awareness Month or Day. Pardon me. I just did a story about that today. So
okay,
thought I'd plug it.
No, I love it. So I was looking at your stories. I was looking at the articles, you know, just through the website. You know, you have your own portfolio. And one of the ones that stuck out to me, and it's funny that you mentioned health. You're a part of health and what?
Health medical.
Health medical. Okay.
Yep.
So the one article that I pulled out that was very intriguing to me, it was with a woman. Her name was Olivia. I hope I say her last name right. I'm not even going to try it.
Leshniak.
Leshniak. Leshniak. Okay. And this was titled Talking About Death. It's Encouraged. Okay. So with that being said, right, I was reading it. Actually, I was listening to it and reading the article. And there are a couple things here that I really, really enjoyed. All right. And it gave me a different perspective about death. Okay. But it's crazy. Okay. So I have it here verbatim. So I was like, first of all, how important is perspective when you are taking an interview, when you are interviewing someone? How important is perspective to you? What type of perspective do you go into it? Do you go in with your own perspective? Do you take it from the interview's perspective? Do you take it from maybe an audience perspective? You know, like how important is perspective to you?
Extremely important. I mean, in life, perspective is everything. But that's a very interesting question. I could describe it as like, usually it involves preliminary research. Okay. A lot of times I'm interviewing medical professionals, doctors these days. So I'm looking up like the, you know, basics of some kind of medical conditions or procedures. So I'll go into it with that. But if it's a more controversial thing, you know, there's always two sides. So I have to think of two sides. I have to ask them questions. Okay, what do you know? Kind of saying like giving them pat on the back questions. Mm. Oh, what's this? But then I have to turn around and ask the devil's advocate quest.
Yeah,
the devil's advocate.
Exactly.
Right. What do you say to the people who say, don't build this hospital in my neighborhood? You can build it out in Dixon City. What do you say to those people? Why do you need to do it here?
Playing devil's advocate. And that's extremely important as anyone who's just trying to put news out there, because then you give both perspectives. And I think that's what's really important. So with that being said, right? So you asked a question. You asked Olivia, like, just about why people should invite death and understand and encourage it, because that title is bonkers, guys. Listen, think about it. Talking about death, it's encouraged. No one encourages that. You never hear that, right? No one. Death is something, it's voodoo. You don't talk about that. But this is verbatim for her words right here. Death isn't spoken of, so we don't know the ins and outs of what to expect. Versus if you announce that you're going to have a baby, everyone comes out of woodwork to show every experience, good and bad. And I was like, damn. I thought to myself, I was like, damn. I was like, she's right. I'm like, she's right. She's always been right. You know, it's just I didn't have that perspective on death. And maybe you didn't have that perspective on death until now, that you were like, wow, death and life, it's a comparison that are opposites but are similar in a way that it's just the end of life. It's the start of life and the end of life. It's a basis of life.
My conversation with her was, you know, I was emotional. It was It was changing. It definitely changed my perspective. Yes. I ended the story as well with, I think, saying she wants people to celebrate death.
Yeah.
And I said, and I wrote, you only die once.
Yes, you did say that.
Oh, I just got the chills thinking about that. But, you know, having such an open conversation about death is refreshing.
Can you share a little bit more on that?
Absolutely, I can.
I mean, if it was that emotional, I'm definitely intrigued to hear it.
Yeah, well, I lost my dad last year completely unexpectedly.
Sorry.
So that's something we never talked about in my family. And, you know, Olivia, and I also spoke to an attorney who deals with a lot of end of life. So that's like creating your will, creating your... I forget what they call it now. It's not coming to my mind. But anyway, those legal parts of death. Mm-hmm. So she says, you know, in our family, we talk about it because that's our job, of course. But, you know, just making those plans, even if you're 20, 30, 40 years old, talk to your family and say, like, this is the person I want to make those decisions for me if something happens. You know, here's where all my secrets are. Here's where my passwords are. Damn. Here's where the money's hidden. seriously, because every minute counts. Every minute counts. And talking to Olivia, she had several encounters with death and her family in just a few years. And she almost died from COVID. She's in the ICU for a few days. And she just shared it all with me and has like the sweetest, most loving voice. And I kept asking her, how do you go into this field wanting to go into the homes of these families who are dealing with the worst thing ever. How?
Going in there with pain and agony, and she has to feel, and she has to basically pick it up and put it back together. I mean, I know she mentioned that something as small as a scent, you know, could help someone who is getting ready to pass, you know, come to terms with it and understand that it's okay to go.
Yeah, you know, creating the environment for the actual death. Like, okay, it's, you know, my father's dying today. Let's light these candles that remind him of his childhood or his family and play that music. And the very specifics, Olivia can come into your home and think about those details while your family can just like relax and do the best they can in that moment.
What an intriguing article. I think one of my favorite things is definitely that perspective after I read that, how it just clicked for me. Like, oh, damn, she's right. You know, no one celebrates death, but maybe we should start celebrating death. And as you ended it, you only die once. Clever on your part.
Thank
Clever
you.
Clever on your part. I Thank love that. You. So, you know, do you also report with Keystone? You mentioned Keystone. Is that something you did in the past? Is that something you're currently doing? Is it the Keystone stage?
Or? It's the Keystone Newsroom, Division of Courier Newsroom. I did work for them full time, but I was laid off in 2022. And I have been freelancing for them a little bit. I have been freelancing for a little over a year now. So working for a couple of different companies.
Okay. And how do you feel about that? Are you enjoying it?
It's been very interesting. I've dabbled in a lot of different things, you know. I've always been a lover of adventure. That's why I went into reporting. It's like a field trip every day.
True.
But, you know, I took this opportunity to, you know, take my time finding the best full-time job and just do what I can to make money. I was a photographer for a whitewater rafting company. So mm-hmm. I sat by the river taking pictures for last summer, two summers ago. And, what else? I work as a trial tech, so I work with attorneys, and so that's like a really serious setting, which reminds me a lot of live television, so I have a lot of fun with it, and I like doing that job, tech stuff, and of course I've been reporting at WVIA, so those things keep me busy. I've dabbled in a few other things, like indie films. I'm in an indie yes. horror film that's coming out soonish.
That's not the one that's in Dallas, is it? Or Nanticoke?
No.
I know there's one coming out of Nanticoke.
No, it's in the Lehigh Valley.
Lehigh Valley? Okay, well, yeah, that's good to know. That's really good to know. yeah, you're all over the place. You're over here. You're experiencing life to the fullest. You're having all types of stories. Let me ask you, what is an ideal, what's a perfect story for you? What's an adventure that, if you had a specific field to cover, what's the field you're covering? I could give you mine, and then...
Go ahead, give me yours.
I would cover extreme storms.
Oh,
110%.
Would you go out and chase them?
I would be a storm chaser. Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Something about adrenaline. It's bad. It's so bad, but I would love to do that. Yeah, like chasing a tornado, like seeing shit from like miles away. But dude, you watch those shows, and they're like, just put it in reverse, Terry. And they're putting it in reverse, and they're getting out of there, you know? So I would love to... Kevin Weatherman, I would love to cover the news, you know, bring you live stuff as to what's going on, but I wouldn't mind doing it at an extreme aspect because I'd be like, wow, this is nuts, and I'd live to tell the story, but eventually maybe I might not be as lucky, but that's what I would focus on, would be the weather, breaking news, my ideal coverage if I were to be in your field.
Okay, so my answer would be arts and culture, particularly humor and food. So I would love to interview comedians or people I admire in pop culture about what they do and how they come up with their jokes and whatever they create. And I love food, so I'd love to write about food and talk to people about... I love, like, NEPA and all our weird, quirky food habits and recipes.
Are you talking about, like, square pizza?
Yes, that's one of them.
That's one of the... Let me get a... What is it, a cut?
Yeah,
call it a cut,
of a tray. So I'm guessing you're not a fan of Old Forge pizza.
I'm not a fan of Old Forge pizza. I think a cut is doing way too much. Just give me a slice. Just give me a slice. That's it.
That's what I'm saying. We have a lot of culture in this area. That's our culture, man.
I get it. It's all right, pizza. It's not the best. It's all right. That's my opinion, though. Everyone has their own pizza, you know, opinion.
That's right.
So, all right. So arts, cultural, that would be your, that's where you would like to stay. I like that. I encourage that. I know you mentioned that you do comedy as well, which we'll, you know, we'll get into that later. I've done some stand-up comedy as well. Maybe we'll save that for some tea time.
Okay.
So we'll save that for some tea time. Let's continue on to these stories. So you gave me an itinerary before we got on the show here, and you gave me some pretty interesting stories that you wanted to expand on. So the first one that I have here is a sideshow performance training. I says, what does that even mean?
Okay. Yeah. I didn't even know at first. A sideshow performer is the person who swallowed swords and juggles fire. And so he lives near Allentown. This man went to clown school in the 80s. His name is Harley Newman. He went to clown school. He is world known around the world for the crazy stuff he does on stage. He, you know, he's gone on tour and everything, but you know, he lives a simple life in Allentown. People around there don't know who he is.
Dope.
He, I think every year he hosts a training program. So I went for one day to experience it. And there was a group of maybe five people there for the training from Canada, the West Coast, who would come to spend the week at his house and do this intense training. And we all had to sign waivers. I was like, what am I getting myself into?
Ooh.
And I'm not as wacky as I think my boss thought I was when he assigned me this story. It was something, you know, somebody found and they said, Haley O'Brien would be great for this. So anyway, I went, and I do have an open mind. I really like everybody and learning their story and what they do. Mm-hmm. The weirder, the better, honestly. But, you know, people are doing things and I'm like, no, thank you. No, thank you. I don't want to participate. He talked me into lying on a bed of nails. So I did it. And it hurts. Like you put your butt down first and it hurts the most at your butt. But then once you like level out your weight on it, it's not as bad. So I went and I did that. And then without my permission, he put a cinder block on my stomach. And then he got an axe and stood right over me and boom, hit the cinder block on my stomach. Yeah, it's all on camera.
And you were okay? Oh my gosh, that's insane. No marks on you in the back? Well, after that?
No, and honestly, I was in so many dangerous situations, like chasing breaking news and things like that, that I'm like, how is that allowed?
Yeah. Yeah, that's nuts. That's absolutely insane. I would do it, though. I would do it. How did he talk you into it? That's a lot of convincing.
I think the bed of nails, like, didn't see that bad. And you know what? Mm. I'll do things for good television. That's a selling point. I actually was offered the chance to scale the tallest building in Allentown for a fundraiser. It's called Over the Edge. And you like scale the building. And I thought about it. My mom said, I don't like heights. I'm very scared. My mom said, you would have a heart attack. And I was like, I'm just thinking for television's sake. You're right.
No, 100%. There are some things that, you know, you would do just because it's our like television sake. I agree with that 100%. Like we had Electric City Axe throwing here, and they were like, yeah, you know, maybe the middleman should walk outside in the Viking suit downtown Scranton. And I was like, that's not a bad idea. You know, I would go out there with just a Viking suit and like these toy axes. Obviously, I can't walk around Scranton with a real axe. I'll go to jail. but I'll go to Subway, you know, I'll grab a pizza, you know, I'll be like, wait, you never seen a Viking before? Just mind your business, you know, but that's content. You know, that's the type of energy that I would definitely do. 110% scaling a building. Sick. I think you should have done it.
I'm all right with it.
All right, so that's a great story. Sideshow, that's intense. You know, I've actually talked to someone who does know a magician. I've been talking about trying to get magicians on the pod. That would be huge. I would love to do that. Sideshow performer, that would be bonkers. That would be insane, especially if they're doing their thing here. The most intense person that I think we've had in this setting, shout out to William Snakespear. He was an exotic snake handler, and he bought all types of critters here.
Wow.
Yeah, we had a venomous snake here. Yeah, but it was in his cage. It stayed in his cage. I was here with a bull snake, like, around my arms. Yeah, he had these cockroaches, Madagascar cockroaches. It was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. But I'm looking for more people like that because I like it. It creates a portfolio.
Yes.
It creates a portfolio, and the weirder, the better.
Yeah, you know what? I shouldn't have said the weirder, the better. You actually are kind of living that philosophy, rather as I have like boundaries, I'm a little too afraid. But that's a great thing that you can embrace that, because that's what will set you apart, you know, is having those different people.
I like that because it creates just like I have a range. We're not only about music. We're not only about poetry. We're not only about comedy, whatever the case may be. It's about you. You know, it's about what we've built here, you know, being the people's voice is a slogan, you know, like this is the people's voice. Let's let you talk, you know, let's hear your story. And I don't have boundaries like you do, you know, I don't have boundaries like you do. I can go ahead and be as free as I want. Maybe not as vulgar, you know, YouTube does have boundaries, but, you know, I could go and do whatever the heck I want in a sense. And I love it. I think it's great. It's absolutely amazing. So. Next story. Okay, very brief content here. The only content that I got out of this one was the word pedophile.
Yes, I was taking personal notes and I never added any.
I do that all the time.
Any explanation there? Just sent that to him. Okay, so that story, just kind of a behind the scenes thing that you don't think about what happened. So I did a story couple of years ago around Valentine's Day where I went and spoke to a couple local business owners, you know, about something related to the holiday. So it was a very lighthearted story. And as part of this, I went to this little gift shop and met husband and wife there. And I remembered like thinking, it's so empty in this shop. And it was just like a small town. And I just felt sorry for them because they had newly opened. And I remember thinking, like, I really hope that this spot on the news will help them get some business. You know, I feel bad for this family. They seemed really nice. So the story gets published. It airs on TV at 6:30 p.m. That night, I was going to improv in Bethlehem at 7 p.m. And I was at Panera, chilling there, scrolling on my phone. And on Facebook, I see that man's mugshot. That man's mugshot, like at the time when it's airing, he was arrested that morning for child pornography.
Oh my. What?
So there I am, like, calling my boss, like, what do we do? It was too late. The story had already aired, making him be like, oh, this is my business. So at PBS, we don't cover crime and breaking news, and we didn't have a live broadcast. We're just not your typical commercial TV news station or newspaper. I just covered reporter or community news, pardon me. So this was the first time I really had to report on a crime. And so the next day I had to say, attention, everybody. We aired a story yesterday, you know, kind of explaining the whole situation, how the timing just really overlapped right there. God. Right after I interviewed him for the news, he was all excited he's gonna be on the news, and then the police showed up at his house.
Wow. That's a crazy story. That's unfortunate timing. I mean, that's the field that you work in, I guess, right? And that's the thing, you know, it's like we gotta make these judgments about people, you know, just first impressions. We gotta make judgments. And I've been wrong in my judgment before. I've been like, yeah, this guy's going to, you know, hold it down. We're going to have a great conversation. And I've been wrong. You know, it's hard to judge people. You do the best you can. From the start of this journey to where you are now, have you found yourself being able to read people a little bit better than like now than when you first started?
I don't think I'm better at reading people, mm-hmm. but I think I'm better at, leveling them, and I think I'm better at connecting with them now that I'm more comfortable with the journalism and the tech side of things. Mm-hmm. I realized that lately I'm just so much more focused on my interview subject, and I think I always was fine, good at interviewing, but I just realized lately I'm like, wow, I'm connecting with people so much more because everything else is absolutely second nature, and I'm realizing it makes a difference in our conversation. So it's not that I'm reading people so much, but I trust people less and less. I will say that.
Okay. Trust people less and less. I often say I have too much faith in humanity. I often say I have way too much faith in humanity, way too much faith in humanity. But I like how you worded that. You said something there and I just lost my train of thought. I wish I could get it back. Come on, come back. I lost it. I'm sorry, I lost it.
Trust people less and less. I don't know what I said before that. Oh, yeah. connecting with people.
Okay, connecting with people. Okay, so you said, you know, journalism now is like second nature, right? It's second nature, and now connecting with people was kind of like the main priority. I think I'm actually the flip-flop. I think I connect with people easier than it is to get a story out of them. But sometimes I look more for the connection, and that's where I fall into like my cracks, because I realized that I'm not going to connect with everyone. It's just physically impossible. It's impossible. It's like, we're not always going to be on the same playing field. You say you try to get them leveled. Is that what you mean by that? You try to find a common ground?
What I do a lot more of is say, hey, you know, let me explain. Like, I think about their point of view more. So whoever it is, I'll say, do I think they know anything about how local news works? Like the behind the scenes or something like that. Like whatever story I'm working on. So now I do a little bit more of like, oh, let me explain this article and, you know, what I think this story is going to be like, and who I've talked to so far and, you know, what I'm thinking. And then it just kind of like helps them. They know my point of view, whereas they would kind of go in the interview and I'd be like, hi, how are you? Kind of like thinking I don't have much of their time, so I need to get to my questions before I run out of it. So can I ask you some questions? And then I'm just like rattling off journalism questions. Mm-hmm. It's so much better when I'm just like, hey, so this is the story. This is what I'm thinking. I know you know a lot more about this topic than I do. So can you just explain that to me? That kind of thing.
Instead of hitting them right away, you warm them up.
Yeah.
In a sense. Yeah, no, I think that's definitely key. It's essential. And that's what we try to do here every now and then. It's like break the ice, so to speak. So then when it's time for the interview, everything's more natural and it feels more loose, loosey-goosey, you know. So next thing we have here is something that I thought was very intriguing, and I think we could segue into this. You know, you said your thoughts on police and firefighters, and then following that was breaking news. Okay.
Yeah, so I was a news photographer for a while, and I covered breaking news. That was a lot of house fires, you know, just a lot of random calls where you hear something on the police scanner and it's a car crash or some kind of incident. So I have been, you know, not first on scene, obviously, but I've seen the first responders in those first kind of critical times.
Mm-hmm. First 15 minutes, right? I think that's what they say.
Well, whenever, you know, when the news gets there, I don't, you know, it always differs. Like, I remember one time I got to a house fire because it was just down the street from the news station. I got there and it was just like completely in flames. And I had never seen a house fire like that before, because sometimes they take hours to burn, usually. So anyway, I was shocked the first time I went to a house fire, and, you know, it takes hours, as I said. So it's just a active scene for a long time out in the street, a lot of firefighters, police. And, you know, then you have your people who own the building. Then you have the neighbors, of course, talking. You know, they have the most to say, out to see everything. But the firefighters, there's a lot of them just like hanging out by the fire truck, chatting and laughing and smoking cigarettes even. And I looked over at them and I was shocked. And I say this a lot of times when I meet firefighters, and they go, yeah, you know, it's just another day. For them, it's just another day.
Hmm.
And policemen too, like their perspective is so different. I think I would suggest that you have them, a policeman and a firefighter on the show as well, because I mean, their lives are completely different. They think so differently because of the horrors they see, the realness they see, sorry to say.
It's just another day. It's unfortunate, but they become desensitized to it, you know, but nonetheless, they have their standard operating procedures. They know when to call it. They know what's right, and they've seen it time and time again. And you and I, as being regular civilians, anyone in this room being a regular civilian, you're going to ask them to keep going, keep going, keep going, not give up, but they have done it time and time again, so they become desensitized to it, so that they know it's like, sorry, but this is time to give up. It's a time to give up. And we have had one officer on here, Officer Ironhorn, a good friend of mine from back in the day. He was on early, you know, episode like 13 or 12, when we just had strictly audio. So maybe I'll invite him back on and we'll talk about it. He's over there. And I think Archibald, he's a part of that police department, Alan Archibald.
All right. I can connect you with Scranton Fire.
That'd be great. That'd be great. I love firefighters. I think, honestly, in my perspective, I think firefighters are pretty dope. They're all pretty cool people, you know. Policemen are pretty nice, too. You know, I have a few friends who have fathers who are policemen. Everyone's good, you know. It's just figure out who's wrong. But, you know, as far as fires, you know, maybe we could segue into Canada for a little bit. How would you feel about that?
Sure. I can talk about it a little bit. I haven't particularly been reporting on it, but I have been reading up.
I've been reading up as well. So right now, one of the most common questions is the Canada fires. Okay, this happened weeks ago. This episode is being released weeks ago. Okay, this happened weeks ago. You know, Northeast area. You know, we ended up having severe smoke to where the oxygen was not clean at all. You know, I know Allentown at one point had 450. Scranton was up to 260 as far as air quality. It was considered unhealthy for you to breathe. You know, so everyone was talking about the smoke. But I rose the question for myself, which is, what started the fire? You know, I don't think a lot of people were asking that question. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and as far as I know, I just think that these wildfires are increasing due to global warming, correct?
So I asked like five other questions to myself after I said, what's starting these fires? And one of them was, so it was a controlled fire. Okay, that's the story. The story is that this was a planned control fire. They do these to get rid of what's called forest fuels. Forest fuels is brush, you know, dried up brush, just so on and so forth. Whatever's on the ground that if Mother Nature were to strike with a lightning strike, we already took out those forest fuels that would fuel the fire that would make it uncontrollable. Okay, so they do these controlled burns in order to try to prevent future disasters. Okay, so the way it goes is apparently Canada was scheduled to do one of these controlled burns and things went south. Okay, the way they started the fire, believe it or not, this is not out of minor warfare. Apparently, it's a flamethrower out of a helicopter. Not joking. Okay, yeah, I've read like three articles. Everyone was kind of consistent as far as a flamethrower. I'm like, that's a little intense.
Yes.
A little overkill just to start a fire. Why don't we just pour some gasoline and light a match and just drop it from the helicopter? You don't have to have a whole flamethrower.
Well, maybe, I don't know, because like now I'm picturing someone lighting a match and like running.
Exactly.
How do you start a fire from a distance?
I don't know. Drop a Molotov off the chopper. Drop a Molotov instead of a flamethrower. But nonetheless, it got out of hand. Okay. Now, you mentioned climate change. You mentioned things were dry. Okay. They have to take things in a certain consideration before they light this controlled fire. Right? There's got to be a plan. What's the plan? You know, maybe they set this fire up. My question is, did they set this up a year ago? And regardless of if it was raining or if it were dry, they still had the mindset to go in there and light the fire. Why did they not postpone it a few more weeks until the weather was cooperating? Because, like you said, it's been very dry. Climate change, I believe it. I met a Republican today who was like, F no. If those Canadians burned, he would be content with that. And I'm not joking. That is a real statement. So, climate change, in my opinion, it's real. It's true. And I think that's why things got out of hand. Okay. But I just kept asking more questions. You know, who gave the okay and why did they give the okay, knowing that the weather wasn't responding as how it usually is in this time of season?
That's my thought, is like, somebody should be in charge. Shouldn't the government have that under control? And I think a lot of us have learned our lessons in the past few years. If we didn't already distrust the government, we're learning to at least question the authorities, right?
And that's what I found myself doing, was questioning the authorities and control burning. I've read this one book called Adam Grant, Think Again, fantastic book. He shared a story from a firefighter who lost his whole crew, who jumped into a burning fire in the forest, and it basically overcame. It was just too much. So the training is drop everything and run out of the woods. Okay. They literally jumped out of the chopper to try to fight this fire. And this was back in the day. Like, I don't think they do this anymore. But nonetheless, the training was to drop everything and run. And the captain said, everyone stop. No, and everyone just kept running. But the captain stopped and he lit a match and burned what was under him. And he crawled himself into a ball and the fire burned around him And he just remained in that ball until the fire was done, and he survived.
Wow.
And he survived because he thought again. Now, I'm wondering, was that supposed to be part of the control process? Should they have burned an outer layer before burning the inner layer? What was the flaw that caused the control fire to not be controlled?
You lost me, honestly.
You see? Only you can prevent wild fires. A lot of questions here. A lot of questions. And I'm just trying to open up your mind. And if you go down that deep, dark hole in the web, don't get lost. Make sure you come back out. On a for real.
Or call Kevin because he'll explain it to you.
I will explain it to you. So that's where I got as far as like Canada and firefighters. And I just wanted to segue into that real quick. But one last thing. You know, before we transition to something else, there was one article that you covered, which was actually a crime. It was someone missing, started missing.
Yes. Most people from this area will know of the name Robert Barron, Robert Barron Sr. He owned Gigiarelli's Pizza Restaurant in Old Forge 7 years ago in 2016. He went missing. Local businessman, had a family. Just did not show up one morning at his pizza restaurant. He was missing for all of these years. This year, they found his body. And so I was at the press conference when they made the arrest, just days after they recovered the body and were able to determine the alleged killer. So he should be in custody right now. But that was very interesting because what's sad is they pretty much knew it was this guy the whole time.
Ooh.
The guy they arrested this year, they were at his house the day he was reported missing. So, you know, that's something we didn't learn until the police paperwork all came out, until the arrest. So it's kind of one of those things that, you know, the police, they had all of this circumstantial information, but they didn't have enough evidence and they didn't have the body. Do you watch true crime?
Every now and then. I more so listen to true crime. I'm okay. Not a big watcher. And I've been reading this one page called Morbid Knowledge. And it's like, it's morbid knowledge is exactly what it is. It's like some crimes and, you know, you get the initial dose and then they give you an article and you just read and go down that foxhole. And we'll talk about that in tea time because I got some pretty interesting stuff from there. Pretty interesting stuff from there. But true crime, yeah, it's intriguing.
Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed that. You know, I don't cover crime much and I've been doing medical reporting, but I happened to be available when the press conference, you know, news broke just an hour before the press conference. Mm-hmm. It was like 5:30 p.m. on a Friday. So I was like, I'll go because I was excited about this. And, you know, I joked with Brandon, my fiance, because we watch so much Dateline and all that stuff that I knew what to ask because of my education from those shows. I asked, you know, what was the cause of death? And I felt silly actually saying that. Like, how did you determine the cause of death? Like, I actually felt silly because I had never, you know, covered anything like that before.
So could you expand a little bit more on the details of this case a little bit here? Okay. So you said it was years later and they found the body. How many years are we talking?
Seven.
7 years. Yeah. They found the body. Where was the body found? Do you know?
Yeah, it was a wooded area in Old Forge. So Old Forge is a pretty small borough. This is just a wooded area near a park. And now in 2016, when he was pronounced missing, they did an extensive search all over this area, all over those woods where his body was.
Oh, wow.
There were volunteers and like search crews, like I'm talking hundreds of people. And it was in the news for months when he went missing. I mean, it was in the news all those years. His family was really pleading with the public. There was a $10,000 reward out. And they just didn't find his body, you know, during that search. And so I'll tell you how they were able to make it happen. So are you familiar with the Brian Koberger case? That's the...
I went to college with him. We were in the same class.
Whoa!
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, we were in the same class. He actually sat right next to me. We were in C++ together, and I could just say that he's a very unique man.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to turn this around now. I'm
triggered. I gotta go.
No, this is so exciting. I'm like, I want to interview you now.
Mr. Kohlberger, yeah.
So anyway, part of that case was the data that provided the location of his cell phone. And they were able to determine that his cell phone was around there those times that at that night, mm-hmm. really late at night, and the next morning, right?
But it was off. Correctamundo?
Was it off?
Kohlberger? His phone was off between those hours.
Oh, his phone was off. You're right.
Oh, I was studying on this guy.
Same. So now with this case, this was a few weeks after Kohlberger was arrested. This was late March that Lackawanna County got this info from the FBI. I wanted to look more into it. Unfortunately, NPR didn't let me because I tried to pitch the story to them. But so Lackawanna County got this data of Justin Schuback. He's the suspect that was arrested. Justin Schuback's cell phone data from that night. So they had Justin Schuback's info. They had circumstantial evidence. Unfortunately, this man was on drugs. He didn't have money. So he was stealing money. And it was really unfortunate. Really unfortunate story. And I'm just thinking about like the text messages between Schuback and his girlfriend, because she didn't know where he was. And then he, you know, he was texting a few people saying, shh. He actually said, S-H-H-H. don't text me for a while, because he didn't want his phone to go off. That was, and then that was the determined the time that he dumped the body. Those exact coordinates led them to the body.
When he said shh.
Right after he said shh. And wow. When he wasn't texting, that location, boom, there was the body.
Wow. That's insane.
So imagine if the FBI could have provided this data in the beginning. That man was walking around on the streets for 7 years.
I wonder why they withheld that data. Or maybe, yeah, that's the question. When did they get that data?
I wanted to look into that. And I think it's, okay, so actually I read the FBI's protocol. And it's, if someone's life is in danger, they'll act on local investigations. If someone's life is in danger. So it's very unfortunate because you couldn't really prove that the public was at danger, that whoever hurt Robert Barron Sr. was going to hurt somebody else, but they deserve justice. That man should not have been walking free for 7 years.
You know, I'm just going to add on that, what you said there. It's not until the FBI doesn't act until they feel like someone else is in danger. Okay. And I'm going to just say this, and we'll go ahead and start wrapping up the podcast and switch over to tea time. But it's very recent, and it's like this week recent, okay? Did you hear about Las Vegas? Did you hear about the backyard crash? Really, really weird story, okay? But the reason why I'm bringing this up, you'll see, is because, okay, so the story is, in Las Vegas, someone made a call, 911 call, that something crashed in their backyard. And they were 8 to 10 feet tall with big bug eyes and a big grin and big mouth. And they're just looking at the family. Get over here right now. 911, please. Sounds like extraterrestrial, correct? Right? Mm-hmm. And that's like, it's a creature. I don't know what it is. Big bug eyes, big mouth, looking right at my family. We're in the house. They're in my backyard. And so an officer went to investigate it. But the only reason he went to go investigate it was because an officer who was nearby got footage from his body cam of this thing flying and crashing from the sky. So that's the only reason they went to go check on it. Okay. But the officer kept saying, I'm only here because my partner saw it. I'm only here because my partner saw it. You know, like, hold on, this froze. Let me give it a second. Come on, guy. Do your thing. And now, perfect. So, yeah, it was like, I'm only here because my partner saw it. And nonetheless, the officer got there and he left. But why I'm saying that is because the FBI didn't want to act on it because they didn't feel like anyone else was in danger at that moment. Why? Why? That officer probably wouldn't have checked out that scene if his partner didn't say, yo, I saw that too. Why? Why?
Yeah, since when are they trying to verify a call to the police? That is crazy. I've never heard anything like that.
Crazy. We'll expand on it a little bit more. The officer, when he went in the backyard, the camera cut off. You know, private property. They said it's private property, which I can understand that. Cool. But I feel like I've seen cops many of times where they're running through backyards and they don't actually cut off the camera. I think it's because, you know, it's, if that is what it is, you know, government, you know, aliens, that's just me. We need you. That's just me being spaced out. But that's something that I read recently and I was like, holy shit. And there's footage too that I'll show you.
Oh, interesting.
Very interesting.
That's a crazy world we live in.
Crazy world. But I guess if his partner didn't see it, the officer would have not showed up. That's crazy. Rub me the wrong way. But so with that being said, we're going to transition into tea time here in a few minutes. But before we get off the air, I do like to give the guest a floor. You got a few more minutes here to any inspiring messages that you want to leave behind for the guests, where people can follow you, where people can find your most recent articles, so on and so forth. The floor is yours.
I just want people to be themselves, but be genuine. And think about your neighbors and your friends. Reach out to your friends. And I don't know. I've never been asked to give people a message, but you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, HALEY O'Brien.
Spell Brian for them.
O'Brien, O apostrophe B-R-I-E-N.
Exactly, because I needed that. I actually asked Abby earlier. I was like, it's O'Brien, right? She's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's O'Brien. I was like, okay, that's what I thought. Because I would have said it wrong. I'm bad with pronunciations of names. I really am. But listen, I really appreciate you coming out to the Middleman Podcast. There is a topic that we didn't hit on that we're going to definitely bring into tea time, and that's fake news. I think we could definitely talk about that and kill that in tea time. But with that being said, I am the man in the middle, Kevin Martinez, signing off here. Stick around for tea time, not brought to you by, but inspired by Arizona Iced Tea. Peace.